It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam has traded in his soccer dad cap for a lacrosse dad cap, but they played early enough. He just came sneaking in the door the last minute. Still, they're still new at this and that team, so they came in second, though, right?
Yeah, but it was a good game, close game.
It's important. I did not realize until very, very recently how that game is taking off around here.
Oh, it's crazy. That park was packed when I just
really?
Left. Yeah.
Well, one of these days. Anyway, here we are, another, as we just said, last show of the quarter. A quarter of this year is almost gone now, and the markets, for all of their turmoil, had a very interesting week, I thought. This was two in a row that did not feel good, but the numbers don't lie, and it was pretty good. I'll let Adam get into all of that in a minute, but first I want to welcome everybody. All the regulars, thanks for always being here. You are the reason we can continue doing this over and over. And if you're new, no matter how you found out about it, or if you just stumbled upon it, try to listen for the whole hour, because we'll always promise you that you will learn something. If there's something you don't know and want to talk about, or if you just have some comments on the passing scene or whatever, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and you will go on air immediately. If anybody is reluctant to do so and thinks they have a stupid question or something like that, I assure you that if there's something you don't know, there's a lot of people listening who also don't know, and everybody would be better off knowing. So don't hesitate, but if you're really, really reluctant, you can always reach us for a question. You can send it to info@vanweefinancial.com. We will get an answer prepared for the next show. So you're never out of luck. Plus, I should mention also that if you ever have to miss a show, if you go to our website, vanweefinancial.com, and I was reminded last week to spell it, V-A-N-W-I-E, financial.com, and all of our shows are available in podcasts there or wherever podcasts are sold.
Yeah, everywhere. You can go to Spotify, you can go to iTunes, you can go to Buzzsprout. There, anywhere that you can think of, we're probably listed.
But only on our website will you be able to read all the blogs that we put out, which are, generally speaking, I think, up-to-date and very interesting and worth your look.
Oh, yeah. At least once a week we update the blog. So Take a look.
All right. So all that said, now we've done our shameless promotions for ourselves. Before we get into it, you still want to do a promo for the upcoming golf tournament? Because we're sneaking up there.
We are, and I will. And I'll do it right now. The Joe Strong Golf Classic is coming up. This one's Joe 13, it's called, because Joe would have been 13 this year. Joe was our friend's son who passed away of childhood cancer, and in his memory, they've started a not-for-profit foundation that benefits the Mulligan's Lab at St. Jude's Hospital. Mulligan's Lab is dedicated to researching the type of leukemia that took Joe, and we've given the foundation has given a ton of money to them. It's a great event. It's sold out every year it's been around, and it's going to sell out again this year. And actually, tickets are selling very fast. It's on May 7th of this year. It's at Queens Harbor. Dinner is included after the 18. It's a scramble, so you don't have to be a good golfer to play. It's very reasonably priced, and we'd love to see you out there. So if you'd like to sign up at joestrong.org.
And if you've never been out there, it is a beautiful golf course in a beautiful part of the world.
It is. There's a couple of holes that look over the Intercoastal. It's really nice.
Yep. So that said, let's talk about the market and why I keep feeling like it wasn't any good, and yet it was pretty darn nice.
Yeah, I called it another strange week in a series of strange weeks. Mm. And the reason is that it's one of those times when it feels like almost nothing is going right, but then you compile the numbers and you realize that the market's been in a bit of an uptrend for a while now, and this week was no exception. Friday morning, it looked like all the gains of the week were going to be erased with yet another bank issue, which to me felt very manufactured. They targeted Deutsche Bank, which is a bank that's been struggling for years.
I can remember when they first moved a presence to Jacksonville, and it was about 15 minutes after that you started hearing the stories of their struggles.
Yeah.
It's been kind of on a down spiral for that long.
I don't know. I didn't research what all the reasons were, but when I heard that name, my first thought was, wow, that just doesn't seem to jive with anything. It seems kind of out of the blue, and it seems like maybe, I mean, I could see it being one of those GameStop type situations where a bunch of people on the internet got together and said, let's sell this one. Yep. Yeah. It just really felt like that. And so when the market opened, the shares were down by 10%. But what happened was the buyer stepped in and the shares ended the day down just 3%. So if you got in the morning, you're up about 7%. And then that sort of coincided with what happened in the market. The futures were down about 300 and or so. And the market opened and dropped to about 300 down roughly, and maybe even 400. And then buyer stepped in and everything just started, the whole day just started to look more positive. And by the end of the day, all three indexes were up. And so all three indexes were up for the week. The Dow and the S&P gained 0.8%, while the NASDAQ was up 1.3% for the week. So really not a bad week. And don't look, but QQQ is quietly up 16.8% to start the year. How about that for the worst performing sector of last year?
Yeah, nothing lasts forever in the market, right?
Nope, that is true. So far this year, only two sectors, the only two sectors of the S&P that ended positive last year are the two worst performers this year. So if you look at energy, it's down about 10%. Utilities, they were up slightly last year, down 6.4%. And on the other side, the two best performers are the two that performed the worst last year. Communication services is up over 18%, technology up over 17%. How about that?
Well, I think everyone would agree that if this year could prove to be a mirror image of last year, that would be a good thing.
I don't think anyone would be upset with that. For the week, all the sectors of the S&P were positive except for utilities, which were down 1.5%. That's pretty good broad-based rally, mm-hmm. honestly. I didn't expect that. I figured it'd be much more mixed than that, but it was everyone but one was up.
Well, I would have thought financials at least would be kicked around,
you would
stomped
think.
On, pummeled and thwapped, I would think.
Yeah, and the best performing this week was communication services again, up over 3%.
Yeah.
I don't know what's driving that except for massive underperformance for the last few years. AT&T and Verizon have just been getting beat up.
When something becomes a big enough bargain, somebody will buy it.
Yeah, financials were up about 29 basis points this week. So really a decent week all around. I mean, I have some more on that, but I hear the music, so I'll have to get to it after the break.
Yeah, there's just a lot of misunderstandings and a lot of confusion. And I think a lot of abject stupidity and lying coming out of the powers that be in Washington, which it's almost like they're trying to talk the banking sector into some kind of a downward spiral.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, when you hear all this bad news, that's usually when things rally.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the end game is for some of these people. We can only speculate on that, but we can only do that after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Bandwidth Financial Hour. That was rather abrupt, wasn't
it? Yeah, a little bit.
Welcome back to the Bandwidth Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do, as usual, have a trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can get a hold of Ken at 904-636-7888. Residential or commercial, not a problem. Since Adam came up with today's trivia question, I'm going to let him present it.
All right, I will do that. According to a recent report, a record number of U.S. households have incomes of over $100,000 in 2023. What percentage of American households have that?
I'm not at all surprised that that's happening.
Well, there has been wage inflation. There's also been regular inflation. So, but
a good underlying question would be what percentage of Americans are living as well as they did when they weren't making $100,000.
Yeah, that one I don't have, but I know it's a big number.
It is indeed a big number. Okay, Emily, a little more on the market before we get on to other topics.
Yeah, I wanted to mention international markets rallied this week. They were almost all up even more than the U.S. was, and once again led higher by Mexico, of all places.
I couldn't figure it out for the last couple of weeks.
4.4%, and just really interesting. Italy and Israel both gained over 3%, and most European markets gained more than 2%. Commodities saw a small gain. Oil and silver both gained more than 3%. And on the flip side, natural gas, the biggest loser of the year, with a decrease of 42%. That's just in the last 3 months. Lost another 5.9% this week. You just can't give the stuff away today.
And it makes no sense to me.
It's incredible. I mean, I don't know. I guess the forecast with everything that went on in Russia and Ukraine and then the mild winter in Europe, and yep. I guess that's driving it, but it just seems so extreme.
The type of market, too, the energy market is a futures market. So what these prices are really reflecting is people's anticipation that it's going to be less and less in demand. Because you know they're going to outlaw this and that, the other thing. Yeah, but that can't whatever. Be all of it.
I'll take the cheap gas. That's fine.
No kidding.
The bond market posted decent gains, and it was over 0.5%. Yields continue to fall despite the rate hike this week. So it's really interesting, and I want to talk a bit about that. The Fed decided to hike rates in the midst of the quote-unquote banking crisis that was happening this week. And it wasn't a surprise. The market was fully expecting a quarter point rate hike, and that's what they got. And it actually absorbed it pretty well until Janet Yellen opened her mouth and said that the Treasury was not going to consider any broad-based expansion of the FDIC insurance. And despite her moronic comments, I really think that that's something they need to address just on inflation alone.
Well, that's the problem. In fact, I'll get into this a little bit as we get into other topics, too. But why are so many things in government indexed to inflation and so many others
That's
not?
Where I'm going with that.
I figured that.
That was made – so that was introduced in 2008 out of the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act, and it was made temporary, raised from $100,000 to $250,000 per depositor. It was made permanent in 2010. Since that time, inflation has decreased the value of the dollar almost 40%. So really, just on inflation alone, that number should be $350,000 per account or per depositor today. But outside of that, what is a business owner supposed to do? Even a larger size small business is going to have several million dollars on hand for payroll, for inventory purchases. You can't have just $250,000. Yeah, exactly. There's just no way. And so what are you supposed to do? If you have $3 million, you're supposed to use 12 different banks and manage that. It doesn't make any sense. So I don't know why she said that, but I don't know why she does anything. I think she's an idiot. So there's that. There's been a lot of rumblings that the White House even is not too happy with her and wants to get rid of her. So we'll see if anything changes there. But honestly, you've got to at least index it to inflation.
Maybe Janet and Kamala should just switch jobs and see if they're better at the other one.
The other sort of unintended consequence of that is that everyone's moving to the big banks. So the party that's in control is for the little guy, but they're supporting big business again.
Danger.
I don't get it.
Danger, danger.
Anyways, that's the sort of interesting side of the market. But the good thing that's happening right now is that the semiconductor industry has been on a real tear lately, and that's generally a very good leading indicator for the market. When you see semis outperform and to the upside, in many cases, the market follows. So keep an eye on that. And that was all I had.
Yeah, I guess you'd say the last century, even, or at least the last part of it, the market bellwether was transportation, because everybody could tell how business was. In fact, I go back to the 80s when we used to do a lot of driving between Wisconsin and Florida, and once in a while we'd swing around and be close to one of the Caterpillar plant in Peoria or someplace like that. And you could always tell when you passed a very large manufacturing facility you count the number of empty spaces in their parking lot, you know exactly how business conditions were across the country. If those things were packed, business conditions were great because everybody's buying vehicles and transporting goods. And then if it were half empty, you'd know that things are going to be slow. Well, that similar situation now is it being applied to the SOX index, which is the semiconductor index, for the simple reason that everything uses semiconductors now.
It does. They almost go into everything.
How many are in that new Ford pickup truck?
Something I don't
like 3,200 or something.
The Lightning, the electric one, or the regular one?
The electric one.
Yeah, I'm sure it's an astronomical number.
And speaking of Ford, how about that $3 billion loss on electric trucks?
Ouch.
Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning, gentlemen.
What's happening?
I don't know. You know, accidentally, as a mortgage banker, I kind of know a little bit about banking.
Yeah.
But we're now getting into detail that only someone who's kind of built a bank or run a bank could really answer for us. Maybe there's someone who's listening, but I'm sure between the two of y'all, you know a local banker that's run a small bank or a regional bank that could explain in terms that even Janet Yellen could understand what is actually happening with FDIC. Because I think it's a lot less danger than people are thinking because of the way that liquidations are handled. But it would take someone like that to actually explain it well. Just a thought.
Well, maybe someone's listening and can give us some insight.
That would be great.
You remember back in the financial crisis when they were closing down banks right and left, I'm sure, and that they were opening local offices. In fact, we had a neighbor who was involved in one of them, and it was every day. They'd go take over a bank overnight, like that.
In fact, one of your neighbors was doing that, weren't they?
And then all of a sudden it went away. Everything got back on its feet, and things were normal. Well, Adam and I were talking in the break or right before the show that this thing that we're having now that kind of got kicked off with the big one, the Silicon Valley Bank, but even before that, the Silvergate in the same week. And those banks were not what you and I would call traditional banks. One of them is a crypto lending institution. And we're sitting here, the two of us staring at each other saying, can you define a crypto lending institution?
I can't even come up with what it would be.
No. Who would borrow crypto or borrow to buy crypto or whatever? I have no idea.
Or,
what could possibly go wrong?
Would you loan money against someone's crypto as the collateral? Because that stuff changes value 10% a week. I mean, I wouldn't.
Well, how about the other one, the Silicon Valley? They made fixed interest loans. We're getting some background here. They're making fixed interest loans to startup companies in a time of rising interest rates. What could possibly go wrong?
I don't know. What
and could? Then he is on the board of directors of the bank that is supposed to be monitoring his bank, and it's almost incestuously dangerous when people get involved like that. And again, I say, what could possibly go wrong? It's a setup for failure. Well, that's not what the world's banking industry is doing, and it's not what most of the regional banks are doing either. It's just in one particular region. So I think the whole thing's overblown.
Question? Yeah, go ahead, Marshall.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have a lot of people writing about these things that have little to no clue. They just grab this and grab that and grab this. Could you throw out a couple of publications that you find mostly credible? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. Now, if he's talking about simply publications for the banking industry, I really don't have any.
I don't either. I think he meant more analysts that cover the banking industry that know what they're talking about. I could do a little research. I have one that we rely on, but it's paid and it's not going to be public information.
No, it doesn't help you unless it's not cheap. It's something only
you have to be a professional to get it anyway. So But I can do some research on that, Marshall, and get back to you about it.
I'll tell you where not to get some information.
Yeah, any of the cable news.
Let's start with Yahoo Finance.
And any cable news station, because they are just going to try and sell you on the fear and get more views and get more people to click on their website.
Yeah, if it sounds like it's either exaggerated or made up, the chances are pretty darn good that it's either exaggerated or made up.
100%.
And you know that the many types of lies, omission's a big one. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And because there are people on the phone lines, I'm going to ask Adam to repeat the trivia question because there's a half a chance that this might be pertinent.
What percentage of American households in 2023 are going to make over $100,000? It's at an all-time high.
And good morning, Lane.
Good morning.
Hey, Lane.
How's everything?
How you all doing?
Great.
Doing good.
Good. What's happening?
Couldn't be great. Well, I won't go into my banking experience, so you probably wouldn't want me as your banker, but...
we'll leave that up to you.
I believe the answer to the trivia would be around 35%.
I think it's closer than around
2023.
That is the number, 35%. Now, I wish we could answer the secondary part of that, which is how many of those people would like to go back to making less than that with no inflation rate around, but that's another story altogether.
Exactly, exactly. Well, the facts I'm looking at say that 50% of those are living paycheck to paycheck.
That's the underlying point here.
Yeah. Well, that and
isn't that something?
It's actually that number of 35% is up 53% over the last 30 years. But adjusted for inflation, $100,000 today is the equivalent of $47,340 30 years ago. So it's up, but it's really not up.
Right.
So,
and it's also geographically very, very sensitive. In fact, we did that on a trivia question a couple of weeks ago. Where will $100,000 income go the furthest? And number one was Memphis. And it's not just a place. In fact, most of the cities that they named are not places I would care to live. I'd much prefer a little better lifestyle. But in New York City, it's about the same as living in Jacksonville and making $34,000.
$100,000 even 10 years ago was $100,000 today is the equivalent of making $77,000 10 years ago. So that's how much the dollar, your purchasing power, has eroded.
Yeah, and you know, some of this kind of plays into that thing we were talking about too. And if you look at the things the government doesn't index for inflation, one of them is taxable Social Security benefits, where a couple, if you're making $44,000 or more, you're going to get 85% taxed. There is absolutely no justification for that in anything I've ever been able to find, because you only should have to pay on zero because they promised, but I could make the argument to go up to half because you got a deduction for half in that your employer did. And it wouldn't be good to me. It would just be understandable. But if that $44,000 had been indexed since 1984, what would happen today is you wouldn't pay 85% of your Social Security or wouldn't pay taxes on it unless your combined income went to $93,200. That's how far behind we've gotten by not indexing certain things that impact a lot of people. And that is where I draw the line. Just thought I'd throw it out. So anyway,
I think you dropped.
Yeah, I think maybe probably did. So but anyway,
good job, Lane. Way to go.
Yeah, very good. Well, and we have your address. Good morning, Chuck.
Hi guys. Welcome back, Adam.
Thanks, Chuck. I know I've been out a little bit recently. But. Yeah.
The prodigal son has returned.
Hey, question. If I convert some of my traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, which I already have a Roth IRA, instead of opening a separate Roth conversion, am I creating a headache for myself? What are the pros and cons when you do a Roth conversion about opening a separate account versus an existing Roth?
There are no
that I already have.
There are none. Merge it.
There are none?
Nope.
Just not that it. I'm aware of. No, no. I do my conversion into a Roth every year same one.
There's a five-year waiting period, as you probably know, for all Roth IRAs, and it starts with the date you first put the original deposit in. But that is your five-year date. It doesn't matter what happens after that. You can put money in from various and sundry places with one exception. You cannot do that with an inherited Roth IRA. That has its own date, and it has its own. It has to be in a separated account, or it's going to be declared no longer tax qualified. So that's the only exception that I'm aware of. Makes it easy, huh?
Okay. Yeah, it does. Very good. That's really what I wanted to know. And is the main one of the main factors in doing a Roth conversion is it, you know, could bump you into a higher tax bracket?
That's probably number one.
Yeah, definitely.
And if you're older, in other words, if you're on Medicare and you start thinking about this, you got to be awfully careful, too, that it doesn't bump you up into a higher IRMA bracket and you wind up paying so much more in Medicare taxes that your Roth conversion savings might just go away.
There's a whole host of things to look out for and make sure it doesn't bump you into the tax bracket that makes your capital gains taxable. Make sure that any of those things that are triggered by jumping up a tax bracket, you have to be real careful that you don't go $1 over and cause headaches for yourself.
Yep. It's a good Excel day. You start listing all this stuff and see. We have some clients who have done it for years now, and they have developed sort of the same as I do, a really, really good picture of what's going to happen income-wise during the year. So they get down to the end, and if it's looking good, and then they'll do some Roth conversion. And we generally, as a rule of thumb, would just keep it a little under what you expect. Because there's once in a while there are things that come up and bite you that you didn't know about. If you keep a good eye on it, it's reasonable. You got to watch all the catch-22s.
So if it's is there a magic number like on the AGI for a joint a married couple filing jointly?
Well, it depends on the Adam. What do you say on the 15% bracket is probably the best.
There's no 15. It's 10, 12, 10, 22. 12.
Oh, yeah, then it's the 12 bracket. It's, what, 88, 90,000, something like that now?
It's in that. It depends, but yeah.
Yeah, it gets adjusted. That's one of the things they do apply inflation protection to.
One of the best ways I've found to do this, Chuck, is to, if you use TurboTax or one of the equivalents, you can go and put all your information in it before the end of the year, and then just play with it and say, okay, I'm going to do this much of a Roth conversion, and it will actually tell you where that lands you in terms of your tax bracket, what your marginal rate is. So that is the best method that I've seen, but just make sure you don't miss anything because one little, I forgot this can throw you over.
It can affect the deductibility of your IRA if you're still contributing too. So that's why TurboTax integrates all these things, and that's why we advocate using it for doing your what-ifing. Don't have to even file that way. Cause they don't charge you to get on it. Okay. Just do all that.
Yeah, you can run as many. Yeah, you can run as many sample ones as you want to and do it as many times as you want and never hit file, and that they let you use the software for that way. So,
pretty nice, huh?
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, if you start working on this and you come up with any revelations, we're always happy to hear from you and see what people's experience is.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show as usual.
Well, thanks so much. What's up?
I don't know what it is, but when the market is up, I enjoy your program a whole lot more.
So do we.
So today's your day for IRA questions. I'm working full-time, and I'm going to be 70 in September, and I'm wondering if I should contribute to a 401k I already sent in my $7,000 for my Roth IRA, and number one, would it behoove me to do that? And yeah. Also, how much can I contribute if I can, if you think I should, to the traditional 401k?
So it is a 401k, not an IRA.
Right.
Yeah. Then you
employer you can... sponsored. Do you work for a company? In other words.
Yes, sir. I work for an independent contractor that does business with Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Because the music is playing, can you hold through the break?
You betcha.
All right, I'd love to take this on right after. So you, thank you.
No hurry. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Yeah, good questions here.
It is.
There have been some changes in this environment, too, and a lot of what you can and can't do depends on your status as an owner of the company. So if you're self-employed, that's one thing. If you're working for a real big company, that's another. And there are some exceptions called the still working rules. And we'll get into that with Ron right as soon as the break, which is right now, I was just told. So we'll pay some bills and be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And before we return to the phone, let me set it up a little bit. Ron is on the line, still working, about to turn 70, still contributes to his Roth IRA and wants to know the rules for contributing to a 401k. And I believe he's going to like our answer. So let's find out.
I believe so as well.
Thanks for holding, Ron. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for allowing me to stay on the line.
Good. All right. The rules have changed for IRAs. You used to not be able to do that at 70 and a half. That they took that away. You still have to be qualified by virtue of earning that money, earned income, not just getting income, but earning that. And I think you mentioned $7,000 you'd already done.
Yes, sir.
That for this year
or last year?
Yes, sir. For.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually for last year.
Okay.
I stand corrected.
It
yes.
goes up to 75,000. Yep, 7,500 for 2023. Yep.
Okay.
That's part one. Part two is that there has never been a problem contributing to a 401k. You might find a problem if you are trying to do something where you don't have to take RMDs when you get to that age. But first off, that's been raised now, and you fell under the wire on that. I didn't. I got taken on it. But now you've got until 73.
Ooh. So,
yeah. How about that?
That'll work.
That is a goodie. But you can contribute up to the full $30,000. Reminder to everybody, you can't write a check to your 401k. Your employer can, but you can't. It has to be deferred out of your salary, and you will have to take RMDs at 73 if and only if you own more than 5% of the company. Otherwise, you don't have to take one due to the fact that they have the still working rule. So how about all that as a cup of tea?
But to answer your question, this is where the news is really good, is that if you are over age 50 this year, you can contribute $30,000 into your 401k.
That's a chunk of change, isn't it?
That is amazing. It used to be $22,000 the last time I was doing this. And, you know, I retired for a couple of years and got tired of being retired. And now that I'm back working, I want to contribute to a 401k again because it's a great deal.
Yeah, and all of that is tax deductible in this tax in 2023. That's made up of your regular contribution, that's $22,500, plus your catch-up contribution, that's $7,500. So,
wow.
Yeah,
and you also want to make sure if you're earning good money and can afford to do this, you got to make darn sure that your Roth contribution is acceptable. Because there are limits where you can't contribute to the Roth. And if that's the case and you don't have any other IRAs, you can always do a backdoor Roth.
Okay.
So
sounds terrific.
I guess the real question is, do you take good news on a Saturday morning?
I think I can.
Good. Well, then got some.
I sure did. Thank you, guys. Always a great show, and thank you for being so informative. I learn an awful lot from you guys every week.
Well, thank you. And we love talking to you. So call again.
Great.
Take care.
Great. I sure will. Have a great day, guys. Thank you.
The Congress, the IRS, we still have a lot of bones to pick with them. One of my biggest ones is the relatively tiny little amount that you're allowed to contribute to a 401k or to an
to
IRA.
An IRA relative to yeah.
Even a simple is better, but why not just have one big limit of $30,000 for people over 50 and 7,500 catch up takes it down to 22,500 if you're under 50. Why not just have one limit like that? Why should you be penalized for working for yourself? Although then we can show you how to do even better with a personal 401k. But laymen, in other words, people who aren't in this all day, every day, why would you know those things?
Yeah.
You wouldn't.
Nope. It's it doesn't make any sense to me, especially if you're not covered by a plan at work. That's sort of the worst case scenario, but you work for someone else, and then you're limited to your IRA contribution limits, which are,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
Which are paltry if you make a decent salary. And so I don't know that will ever change, but it is something that we would like to see change.
Those of you of a certain age probably remember when the IRA actually became a household word. And that was under Reagan, who sort of stressed that we have to start taking care of ourselves. And that you were allowed to put in 2,000, I think it was back then. And years later, they jumped it up to 3,000 and it sat there forever and ever and ever until somebody finally got the bright idea that they were going to index it for inflation. And now it's gotten up a ways. But let's face it, that's nothing in the big scheme of things with the cost of retirement.
Yeah. The IRA contribution is the same as your catch-up contribution on a 401k.
Exactly. So you got a $22,500 difference by working for a big company.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you have to pay both sides of your Social Security and so on.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, you are not helped with by contributing to the 401k.
No.
So we got plenty of bones to pick tax-wise. And you know, we've just got a few days left until tax time comes. So there's some topics that are germane there, and this is certainly one of them. You are able, up until tax day, to contribute to an IRA for last year. Now, that does not work if you're deferring money into a 401k. Once the year ends, your ability to do that stops for last year. But you can do it with the IRA. That's a little plus. Another thing that most people don't think about is they sort of put it off until the very end and then contribute to last year's IRA. But what if you put it in early? You got an extra, say, 12 to 15 months of tax-free growth, tax-deferred growth in your IRA. We try to get people to do their catch-up if they've always done it late and then begin immediately on this year so they get more time in the market. Just little things. There's going to be a lot of people starting this year, that are going to be caught in some tax squeezes. I mentioned the one about the taxability of your money not being indexed. That's going to be one of them. But you're going to also find that 8.7% in Social Security is going to bump some people up in brackets too. So, you know, IRS giveth and IRS taketh away.
They do.
Yeah. All right, just back to the subject we were talking about for a minute with the types of banks that were failing in California. And I just wondered if anybody out there who, again, you got to be of a certain age. Do you remember the skit that they used to do on Saturday Night Live? It was called the mythical First Citywide Change Bank. And that's a place where they'd give you four quarters for your dollar, or they'll give you 10 dimes. Or two quarters and 20 nickels.
They have change combinations you've probably never thought
of. That's right. And you know how many ways you can break a dollar into change? I asked Adam this earlier. There are 293. And the punchline, and this reminds me of the current situation, the punchline on that was people would ask him how they make money. And he said, "We make it up in volume." Sarah and I have been laughing about that for as many years as I can remember. And when this came up, it was pretty much the first thing that came to mind.
Back when Saturday Night Live was funny.
Yep, back then. All right, who will need to file? You don't have to file unless certain conditions are met. If you're single, you don't have to file a return. If you make under $12,950, if you're under age 65, or $14,700, if you're 65 or older, and married filing jointly, that number becomes 25.9 if both spouses are under 65, 27.3 if one is older and one is younger, and 28.7 if both spouses are age 65. Now, you might notice something if you dig into the tax law a little bit. That just sort of corresponds to the new improved standard deductions. So if you're going to claim income up to the standard deduction, you're going to take it right back. So why file? On the other hand, you may owe some special ones if you have certain things. One of them is AMT, alternative minimum tax, but that generally only applies if you're making a lot of money, so you're probably not part of this discussion anyway. If you have any additional taxes on any qualified plans or something like that, you might need to file. You can usually check these things through TurboTax or CPA. If you have tips that were unreported, you have to report them all. I'm just going by the book here. What you actually do, you don't tell me about, and I won't say anything, but they are taxable, and you should claim them, and you should file. If you have uncollected Social Security, Medicare, or railroad retirement tax on tips you reported, that's important. There are household employment taxes. If you routinely hire people in your house and it goes over a certain amount, which changes once in a while, if you had net earnings from self-employment of at least $400, if you had wages of $108 or more from a church or qualified church-controlled organization, you should file. And if for any reason you might have had an excess withholding from your paycheck, they're not going to send that back to you unless you file. So there are times when you might be under the limit, or maybe you overpaid your quarterlies. You have to file anyway. Also, some people, now it looks to me like they're going to expand this again. The earned income tax credit, which is money you get even if you didn't pay it in. For instance, if you have a low income and maybe a child at home, there's an additional child credit too. But anything that you are entitled to get back like that, you must file to do those. Just so you are aware between now and April 15th that it's not going to go the other way. Some little things. And then one more, we had a little discussion in the office this week. I don't know if anybody's heard, but it's been all over the news, that for the first time in years now, home prices fell last month. And I've been trying to find a way to put this, and I can't really do it real well.